This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Diddy Bucks. Sean Combs busted, paying $100,000 to illegally obtain that Cassie beatdown video from the Intercontinental. Ruh-roh. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. Thank you for being with us.
All the horror stories, all the testimony we've heard.
One assistant having to go to the hospital.
Working for Diddy was making her go bald. She was losing her hair.
He is beating the living crap out of your daughter. Diddy had three guns across his lap. I don't like this back and forth. I prefer guns.
Bombshell in the courtroom. In the last hours, it's revealed that Sean Combs, a.k.a. Diddy, allegedly paid off an employee to the tune of $100,000 to get that Cassie Ventura video. Let's take a look at the Cassie Ventura beatdown video. Now, it was speculated upon so much in the press. Where did the video come from? Did it come from the raid on Diddy's mansion? Did he have it there? Where did it come from? Wow. You wonder why he paid $100,000 for this? Did he think it would never come to light? Busted! In court, sworn testimony that Sean Combs paid $100,000 to get his mitts on this video. Look at it. I want to see more of the Cassie video. This is the video that cracked this case wide open. Cassie Ventura used this to sue Sean Combs within 24 hours when he realized she had, he settled. And then, you know, released his scraping apology video. Now, this goes on. He drags her off in nothing but a towel, so arrogant. He thinks that's okay to run around a posh hotel like the Intercontinental in nothing but a towel. Thank heaven I didn't have to see that towel drop and see the Tootsie Roll. But that said, it goes on. But this video was used in her civil lawsuit, and this video was like pulling the tiger by the tail. You can't hold on and you can't let go. Because once the feds saw this, they had to do something. The statute of limitations had run in the local jurisdiction, so it was up to the feds. And what were they going to do? Stand there with their thumb up their rear end? No, they had to act. Ergo, therefore, the multi-count federal indictment. No wonder he paid $100,000 to get his mitts on it. Joining me in All-Star Panel, but first straight out to Sydney Sumner, Crime Stories investigative reporter who has been on the case from the very beginning. Sydney Sumner, $100,000. What happened? I bet Sean Combs was just twirling around in his chair in that courtroom. Tell me everything.
Well, Nancy, Eddie Garcia told us that Christina Corum was actually the first person to reach out to him trying to obtain a copy of that video. And Garcia told her, no, there's no way I can do that. You're going to have to talk to hotel management or you're going to have to get a subpoena. And after talking on the phone with Christina Corum and telling her, no, this isn't an option, she then showed up to the hotel, asked him in person again. He again politely told her no, she would have to go through the proper channels to get that video. But he did tell her, you know, off the record, this video is bad. So Christina Corum then calls back and puts Sean Combs on the phone to have Combs ask him to get a copy of this video. Again, Garcia is like, you know what? No, I can't do this. This has to go through management. And Garcia starts running that up the chain. So now that he has had three separate conversations where he's had to tell these people no, he goes to management and tells them what's going on. Then he gets a call on his personal cell phone number, which he did not give out. And at this point, he's a little bit scared. He gets this call on his personal phone number. Both Christina Corum and Combs are still trying to convince him to give this video. And Combs mentions, you know what, I'll take care of you if you help me out. And Garcia immediately took that to be a financial offer. So Garcia goes to his boss, and his boss says, you know what, tell him we'll do it for $50K. And he relays that over the phone back to Combs, and Combs agrees to this $50K. How soon can you get it to me? Here's the address where you should meet me. So Eddie goes to this meeting with a USB stick of the only copy of the video, hands it over, and Christina Corum is there. So he calls Corum to let her know that he's arrived to make this exchange. She gets a security guard to bring him up to Combs' room, and he meets with Combs. Christina Corum is in and out of the room. Combs wanted to ensure that this was the only copy of that video. He made Garcia repeat that like 10 times. And he also told Garcia that Cassie wanted this video gone too. Everybody wanted this to disappear. Garcia was doing the right thing by giving them the copy of this video. So Combs makes Garcia sign these intimidating documents. Garcia just wants to get out of there. And those documents were confirming that that was the only copy of this video in an NDA. So Garcia testifies that he didn't really read those documents to get an idea of what he was actually signing. He just wanted to get out of there as quickly as possible. Then Combs starts counting out this huge sum in stacks of $10,000, and they had agreed upon $50K, but Combs counts out $100,000, and Combs intended that money. So the $50K for the actual video, then split the other $50 between you and the security guard that responded to the incident to keep this quiet. So that's how Garcia took the extra $50K that was coming in. And he says Christina Corum was in and out of the room as Combs was counting this money. So she knew that he was being paid off for giving them the copy of this video. And a few weeks later, Combs checked in with him one more time just to make sure that was the only copy, and he never heard from him again.
Joining me, in addition to Sydney Sumner in an all-star panel, Nima Romani with us. Let me tell you about Romani, former federal prosecutor turned trial lawyer, president of the West Coast Trial Lawyers, author of Harvard to Hashtag. It goes on and on and on. But the important part for me is he was a Fed. Okay. The state system is very different from the federal system. I was lucky to get to be a Fed for 3 years before I became a violent crime prosecutor. Very different animal. Nima Romani, can you say unindicted co-conspirator? And I'm talking about Corum, who denies all wrongdoing. She was there. She was on the scene. Unindicted co-conspirator. Explain.
Nancy, we've been talking about Christina Corum for months now, and she's Combs' right-hand woman, and she knows where the bodies are buried, and she's actually an active participant in this obstruction of justice, this witness tampering scheme, this bribery scheme, which, of course, is a RICO predicate act. So I believe the feds are leaning on her, and she will testify. She's going to turn on her former employer, Sean Diddy Combs, and it's just a matter of days before she's on the stand.
You know, Romani, I've never accused you of throwing around Latin or legal phrases again. You know, jurors don't like that. Not everybody is miserable enough to have lived through law school and had to put up with other lawyers for a living. You know, they can be very obnoxious. You ever been stuck on an elevator in the courthouse with a bunch of lawyers? They're constantly throwing around legal terms and Latin terms to impress people. Please stop. When you say, this is a predicate act, could you just please talk and regular people talk? Because I had Ray J the other day telling me how Combs is not going to be convicted, that this is not sex trafficking and it's not RICO. RICO is, it's the prize here, all right? That's what the feds want. They want a conviction on RICO, which is a criminal enterprise. Simply put, it can be a loosely joined together group of people that take part in a criminal enterprise. That's what it is. It's really not hard. No legal mumbo jumbo necessary. And when you have employees or minions, as I call them, doing your illegal bidding, such as helping bribe someone, which is extortion, that makes them part of the criminal enterprise. extortion is a predicate act. Now, explain in regular people talk what you mean and why this is a RICO case. It's not hard.
It's not. And that's why Ray J doesn't understand the law. So like you said, you just need that loose association. That's the criminal enterprise. Bad Boy Records with Diddy at the top. That's enough. Then you need a pattern of racketeering activity. So what does that mean? You just need two crimes that happen within a 10-year period. So what are those types of crimes? It could be sex trafficking. It can be prostitution, Nancy. We've heard lots of evidence of that. Obstruction of justice, witness tampering, arson, Kid Cudi's car. So you can have bribery. So as long as you have these, what we call racketeering predicate acts or these crimes, that's the racket. So you don't need to be the mob. You don't need to be a drug cartel or a street gang. You can convince Combs of racketeering as long as you have these elements, which we do in this case. And the reason RICO is so important and so powerful, Nancy, is you can bring in a lot of evidence and a lot of people in the case. So someone like Christina Horam, even if she didn't make the actual payment, as long as she is a co-conspirator, she enters into this unlawful agreement with Diddy to bribe someone or to pay off a witness, she's on the hook for all the crimes in furtherance of the conspiracy, even the sex trafficking. So Ray J, with all due respect, you don't know what you're talking about.
And you know, it doesn't have to be a bunch of thugs. It doesn't have to be the mob. RICO has been used in LA, I might add. Widespread corruption. RICO has been used on the LAPD, and it worked on cops. So it's not just about the mob for RICO. Joining me, in addition to Sydney and Nima, Rob Shooter is with me. And Rob Shooter, sometimes I don't know if I love you or I hate you, because you worked for Diddy, Sean Combs, for years. You quit. God bless you. You had to see, legal term, crap ton of misbehavior. Let me tell you about Shooter. He's a PR guru. He worked for Combs. He orchestrated tons of Combs PR, and PR was Combs' specialty in his mind, and he was a tyrant. He is the host of Naughty But Nice podcast, and that's at Rob Shooter, S-H-U-T-E-R, not bang, bang, shoot, robshooter.substack.com, and author of The Forward Answer. Shooter, with that introduction, are you surprised? Combs busted in a $100,000 extortion?
No, I'm not surprised. But first of all, let me say, Nancy, I think you love me. I know you don't hate me. I think it's love. However, back to the subject matter at hand. Puffy was a bully. He had a lot of money. He liked to flash it around. I remember going to restaurants with him, and he always had cash, and he'd always have a $100 bill in his hand to give the maitre d' to get a better table. He gave huge tips. He always used to say, tip the waiters.
Wait. Let me just hold on. You say so much, I might drink you from the fire hydrant. Let me get this picture. So I got Sean Combs and his entourage at some fancy restaurant that I would never dream of putting my toe in. And he gets a seat, but it's not the right seat in the fancy restaurant. So he's got to get the right seat. Are you serious? He would pay extra $100 to get not just a seat, but the right seat.
It really mattered to him. This is who he is. I couldn't care less where I sat. I'd be lucky enough to get in. For him, it really did matter. He thought everybody was watching him, and to some extent that was true. And he thought having Diddy not sit at the best table was a bad look. And so he would make sure that wouldn't happen. And how would he do it?
Look, if you seat Sean Combs by the men's bathroom or the kitchen, God forbid, or the entryway where he might feel the wind when they open the door, O-H-E-L-L-N-O, that ain't going to happen. Just give me an example. What are some of the restaurants that Sean Combs would favor?
There was a restaurant in New York that he loved called Nobu. It's still open. But he also, too, I was in his car once.
Do you know how much one piece of sushi is at Nobu? It's like $40.
Yeah, it's pretty expensive.
And I don't mean a roll, Shooter. I'm not talking about six pieces. I'm talking about one little piece of nigiri $40, Nobu.
It's crazy. And then he puts even more money down on the table to get what he thinks is the seat he deserves. My point here, though, is he is used to throwing money at any situation to get what he wants.
I like the way you said that, throwing money. Okay, go ahead. I want to hear about the $100,000 of money.
Money. I was with him once, and he was told it was Fashion Week in New York, and he wanted to go to a fashion show. And I called the fashion people to try and get him in. And he was told no. So what did he do? This might sound familiar. He asked me for the number and he called himself. And I think he offered money to an assistant, a young stylist.
We are living in this Dirty Diddy dystopian dumpster world. In some way, shape, or form, Dirty Diddy is going down.
My time working with Diddy was extraordinary, Nancy. I've never experienced anything like that again. He was the ringmaster, and we played along in his circus.
Again, when you don't know a horse, look at his track record. Diddy busted. Diddy Bucks, $100,000 paid off for what he thought was the only copy of the Cassie Ventura beatdown video. Why would he pay $100,000? Oh, there he is, half naked again. Oh, and he's walking that way because he's dragging Cassie Ventura behind him. $100,000. Why did he pay that? Why did he pay $400,000 to Mia? And the defense tried so hard to discredit her. Why did he pay $20 million to Cassie Ventura to get her to shut her pie hole? But was it, Sydney Sumner, was it the only copy of the video?
Unbeknownst to Eddie Garcia, it was not. He believed that Israel Flores was very by the book. And that's the security guard we heard from on the stand first. And he didn't think that Israel Flores would have taken a copy of it home. But Flores testified that he wanted to show his wife what had happened because otherwise she wouldn't believe him. So that iPhone video that he took of the surveillance footage ended up being one of the only surviving copies as far as we know. We still don't know exactly how CNN obtained their copy of the video.
Well, you know what? Robert Crispin joining me, private investigator, was with former federal task force officer for the U.S. Department of Justice in the Miami Field Division. They're not sitting around twiddling their thumbs. Former homicide crimes against children investigator. He is now at CrispinInvestigations.com. Crispin, don't you just hate it when you blackmail somebody to the tune of $100,000 and there's another video floating around? Ruh-roh.
I mean, really, come on, think about it. Do you really think that no one else was going to have a video of Diddy kicking the hell out of somebody? Especially Cassie Ventura? Come on. So here's the beauty of all this with the government. This Castigard letter stuff, this king for a day, queen for a day, they need people to give testimony in lieu of being indicted to say what happened.
Hey, Crispin, hold on just a moment. I want you to factor this into your answer. Hold on.
Okay.
Shooter, with me, Rob Shooter. What was Sean Combs' reaction typically when he doesn't get his way? Because in court, when he was watching Brian Steele, who's a very, very good trial lawyer, he's a great defense attorney, right? I've watched him in action. So Steele started off with Mia with the Andy and Mayberry approach, trying to get the answers, but yet being genial to her. He didn't want to beat up on Mia. And you could see Sean Combs going, moving around and twisting around and holding his face and all that. I mean, the jury could see him. And then suddenly, Brian Steele has a change of heart. I mean, you can imagine if Diddy is steering that ship, then he gets really mean to Mia. Still does. So Diddy not getting what he wants. Can you imagine how angry he was when he finds out that was $100,000 right down the crapper? There was another copy.
Yeah, I'm sure he was absolutely furious. Let me tell you a little bit of a secret here about Puffy. For somebody with all the money that he has, he's incredibly cheap.
He never wanted to pay for anything he didn't have to pay for. He wanted to get free clothes, free dinners, free tickets if he went out to clubs, restaurants. He just didn't want to pay for stuff. And so for him to have to reach into his own pocket and pay $100,000, which I think for that tape is incredibly cheap, that tape is going to change his life. And so it was worth tens of millions of dollars. For him to get it for $100,000 cheap and then to find out he didn't get it all, there was another copy, he will have exploded.
When you say exploded, what do you mean? Throw himself on the floor and kick like a school child, a two-year-old, screaming and kicking and snotting and crying. What does he do when he doesn't get his way? Well, I know he beats Cassie Ventura and others, but what is he like when he doesn't get his way? Or does he always get his way?
Well, that's interesting. He normally always does get his own way. And so when he doesn't, it's hard for him to believe. It's like a shock. At first, he doesn't quite know what to do because he never gets told, no, there's nothing that he doesn't think he can fix with money, with power, with making a personal phone call. He deeply believes in his own ability to convince you to do something that you otherwise wouldn't want to do. But he's a screamer. He's a shouter. He's a violent man. He could throw things. I've seen him get so angry that he looks like he's about to pass out. The veins in his neck are popping. He turns into
to hear about that, Shooter. What do you mean when he doesn't get his way, he looks like he's going to pass out?
He gets so angry, Nancy. He gets so angry, he forgets to breathe. Like, he just can't believe that somebody says no to him. He can't believe it.
I'm just imagining when Sean Combs finds out there's another video floating around.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Rob Shooter joining us from Naughty But Nice. I don't know about that. But hold on, everybody, very quickly to Robert Crispin. Now that you know more about Sean Combs from someone that knows him, can you only imagine him gnashing his teeth and twisting his tail when he finds out there's another video?
And he gave $100 away for it? Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. He's not too happy right now. And now people are parading in and talking about it. People that could have been indicted, but they needed these people. They needed to seal up that part of the testimony for that money.
We are live at the federal courthouse in downtown Manhattan, the Monahan Building. Standing by is investigative reporter Lauren Conlon. She's been in the courtroom all day long. Star of Pop Crime TV. What a bomb, a stink bomb for the defense. Dropped right in the middle of that clutch of lawyers, $100,000 Diddy bucks paid off for bribery, which, as Romani pointed out, is a predicate act. You have to have an underlying felony or predicate act to prove RICO. Tell me how that went over in the courtroom.
Yes, Nancy, we started off by getting a really big interruption by a woman that works for the MTA. The entire courtroom turned around. This is before Eddie Garcia, the witness, walked in. But that was quite a moment. She was screaming at the press, saying that the press is awful and the press is laughing at Diddy. And you should have seen Diddy's face as well as everyone in the courtroom. We were all in shock. But back to Eddie Garcia, I mean, this testimony was incredibly important to this case. As you know, he testified that he received multiple calls from Christina Quorum, Diddy's assistant, before she eventually passed the phone over to Sean Combs himself. Eddie Garcia described talking to him, saying, you know, look, I already told your assistant here, but I don't have any clearance to obtain this video that you want me to obtain. I cannot go in this room. Only my boss can do that. And he described Diddy kind of just buttering him up, saying, you know, I know you can do it, Eddie. I believe in you, type of thing. And he also described Diddy as being very nervous seeming on the phone, saying, look, this could destroy my reputation if it gets out. Now, he said, okay, you know, I'll talk to my boss, et cetera. And this was actually after receiving a call from Diddy and Christina on his cell phone. They started off by calling him at the general security desk. They somehow got his cell phone, which he said did make him a little bit nervous. And he said that, you know, he talked to his boss and he said, look, this is what's going on. They want this video. And his boss said, okay, tell him $50,000. They make this meeting happen where Diddy tells him a meeting place. He goes and gets this black USB from his boss at the Intercontinental. And he goes and he meets with Diddy. And he describes being taken up to this room by one of Diddy's security guards. He meets with Christina Quorum and then eventually Diddy. And he says that after some back and forth, Diddy requested the IDs of Eddie Garcia and his boss and another gentleman. And one of the first testimonies we heard, I think it actually was the first one, was Israel Flores, who also was on duty that day. But Eddie Garcia said, I don't think that Israel Flores is going to go for this. So they got the ID of somebody else. And they texted these to him. He went in another room, came back, got an NDA. Eddie Garcia had to sign this NDA. And then eventually Diddy came back with a brown bag of money and a money counter. And he did not get $50,000. He got $100,000. And he also said that about 2 weeks later, it was Easter. Diddy called him again to check in, saying, Eddie, my angel, you know, how are you? Have you heard anything or anybody mention this video at all? And he said no. And that was that.
Could you tell me what this reaction in the courtroom when it came out from not one but two witnesses that Combs had bribed $100,000 to get that video?
I'd say today the jury is much more reserved than they were while listening to Mia. I mean, this is important testimony. So they are listening intently. I would say their heads kind of go back and forth between the lawyer and the witness, you know, appropriately. And they look at the documents that they're reading. We saw multiple times the NDA on the screen. And these jurors, they were reading it. They wanted to catch every word here.
You know, I'm very curious too. Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, psychoanalyst out of L.A. and author. Dr. Bethany, to hear what she's saying, what Lauren Conlon is stating, to finally be hit with reality that you've been uncovered in a bribe. And what's so important about the bribe, not just bribery on its own, but it serves as a required underlying felony to show RICO. And you know, Sean Combs knows that, and it's just pouring from the witness stand.
Well, you know, he can beat down Cassie Ventura, but he can't beat down the prosecution. He cannot beat down the feds. And this is the telling moment for him. I wish I had like a monitor to rate his, to measure his perspiration rate, his heart rate, to see what he's really going through. I bet he's flooded right now. I bet he's enraged. Like Rob Shooter talked about, the veins bulging out. He is probably enraged. He doesn't feel guilty. He doesn't feel worried, Nancy. He is mad, and he's not going to be able to get away with this once he's incarcerated. He's going to have plenty of incidents when he's called on bad behavior, and there's nothing he's going to be able to do about it. You can't buy your way out of it once you're incarcerated. And this interaction about the $100,000 bribe, you know, this is just one iteration of many incidences where he's bought people off.
Lauren Conlon joining us from the Monahan Courthouse. She's been in the courtroom the entire day. Lauren Conlon, tell me about the woman that started screaming. What was that all about?
That was so crazy. I have to say, I've seen her pretty much here at the courthouse every day. She apparently works for the MTA. She does seem to have some issues. I'm clearly not a doctor, but I've seen her cause a fuss outside. She just is always yelling at the press. And this morning, I was literally 3 feet away when she walked into the courtroom because she is a member of the public, and she did get here early enough to put her name on the list. And I think she was actually the number one spot. So she walked in the courtroom, and this is before the jury walked in. The judge was discussing some issues with the defense and the feds. And she just starts screaming, Diddy, they're laughing at you. They're laughing at you, meaning the press. And then at one point there's three marshals on her. They're trying to usher her out. She's standing still. And she says to one of the marshals, go ahead and use your gun. And that's when a bunch of the press kind of turned around to make sure their back wasn't, you know, to the scene, because it was pretty alarming. But you had to have seen Diddy's face. He literally was like, what is even happening right now? His jaw was on the ground.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
to Dr. Kimberly Melman Orozco, joining us, executive director, Freedom Light human trafficking expert, and author of Hidden in Plain Sight, America's Slaves of the New Millennium. It's an incredible book, by the way. Dr. Kimberly, thank you for being with us. Dr. Kimberly, an aspect that I have observed, and I want to see the Cassie Veet Down video again, and I'll tell you why. Sex traffickers, rapists, especially serial rapists, they believe they're going to get away with it. And usually they do. If you take Combs, for example, all the years he has been attacking people, according to the alleged victims, drugging them, raping them, videoing them without their consent, butt naked in all sorts of positions. Here he is in a public hotel hallway, Dr. Kimberly, and he doesn't care. That's actually fine with him. To beat her, to stomp around in his socks and his towel, that's okay. The arrogance of these sex traffickers and sex offenders, they're convinced nobody's ever going to tell on them. The security guards aren't going to hand over the video. No one would dare cross Diddy. Is it a common character trait amongst sex traffickers, Dr. Kimberly?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Nancy. And I would say that we certainly see with all types of sexually based offenders, they can be emboldened when their crimes are met with some level of impunity. And I think that Diddy's celebrity status has certainly bought him some privileges that the average person who engages in criminal activity is not afforded. The difference here, though, is his pattern of criminal activity. I think you hit the nail on the head when you had your opening and you said the statute of limitations for locally based charges had elapsed. And I think that's right. I don't think anybody disputes. I don't even think the defense disputes that their client is a criminal. He has engaged in criminal activity. I think their argument is that the statute of limitations has elapsed and that there's an overreach with the types of charges that he's facing with regards to human trafficking. From what I can see from this case, I think there is some atypicality. For example, we don't see Cassie being sold off to other people. We don't see the type of modern day slavery.
Dr. Kimberly, she was trafficked to other people. According to her, because sex workers were flown in to have sex with her on video, even when she didn't want that. Wouldn't that constitute?
Typically, it would be atypical, but I understand exactly what you're saying here, Nancy, and this is why this is a precedent-setting case. But typically, the trafficking, when somebody is sold to another person, the person who's receiving those sexual services would be the commercial sex consumer and would be paying the trafficker. That's what would happen typically in a sex trafficking situation. This is atypical in the sense of Combs was paying sex workers to engage in sexual activities with Cassie. Some of those sex workers testified and stated that she seemed to be enjoying herself, quote unquote. I think that that's all up for debate. And I think that that's part of the adversarial presentation of this case in front of the jury.
Okay, that is a mouthful. Dr. Bethany Marshall, response?
About him throwing those lavish parties with women who are compromised. And because of that, he promotes his business to celebrities. And that part has yet to come out. But he is benefiting quite a bit from this. He may not be taking cash, but he is taking business deals, the sale of his clothing, his perfume, everything. He is reaping all the benefits of this. And in that Cassie beatdown tape, Nancy, a little detail is I think she's carrying an Hermes purse. He rushes out. He grabs the purse as if it's his own and grabs her, drags her down the hallway. What is the difference between that and a pimp on the street giving a 12-year-old a very small gift and then withdrawing it when she doesn't obey him? This is slavery and sex trafficking 101. It just takes an unusual form.
Bombshell in the trial of Sean Combs in court today, evidence of a $100,000 bribe paid for the Cassie Ventura beat down video. That wasn't the only witness on the stand. Sydney Steinmer, Crime Stories investigative reporter, wasn't there a bookkeeper for Bad Boy Records that took the stand?
That's correct. Derek Ferguson, who was the former
chief financial officer for Sean Diddy Combs' businesses, has been on the stand. And he worked for Diddy for a very long time, 1998 to 2017. So far, he's giving us a rundown of how finances worked for that business, who carried money. It wasn't uncommon for staff to be handling large amounts of cash back in the day, laying out exactly how finances worked for Sean Combs' businesses, saying that Sean Combs occasionally used company cards to charge personal charges, and that staff later went back and reconciled where exactly money needed to shift from account to account to cover those charges.
Okay, hold on. Wait. Sydney, as usual, you're giving me a ton of evidence. Let me sift through it, because you know I like to go through each line individually. Okay, Nima Romani, did you hear what Derek Ferguson's testifying to? It's Sean Combs' former CFO on the stand. You know, he knows where the bodies are buried. Did you hear what she just said? That they would make these expenditures, say, let's say $1,000 for a baby oil and Astroglide, or $100,000 payoff. And then the accountant would have to figure out how to shift funds. In other words, cook the books to make it all kosher to be business expenses. That's what that is.
That's absolutely what it is, Nancy. And this is consistent with all the assistants, what they've been testifying to, that they had a lot of cash. And then when it was something unlawful or something for the freak-offs, they would use that cash. And if it was something legitimate, like a meal, they would charge the credit card, right? The business account. And look, even when Combs paid off Eddie Garcia, he told him, don't make any large purchases. He knew that this was illegal, just like he paid cash to the sex workers. He paid cash for the drugs. There's nothing wrong with cash, but usually, Nancy, people use cash, large amounts of it, when they're engaged in illegal activity. And that's exactly what we're seeing here.
Isn't it true, Nima Romani, that banks across the country, when you make a $10,000 withdrawal, or deposit, the bank says, whoa, wait a minute. $10,000 and $1, we've got to account for that. Are you a doper? Because that's common, that amount of cash used. Something's way wrong. I have to dig around just to get out of a parking deck. You know, I'm looking under the carpet in the minivan. Who carries $100,000? Sean Combs. Now listen to this, Romani. Ferguson, you know, the meek, mild-mannered accountant on the stand describes properties Combs owned in Miami, New York, the Hamptons. Executives are given American Express cards for expenses, but the business relies on cash. Many of the, quote, performers, sex traffic workers, requested cash as payment. The bodyguards carried cash. That's what we're hearing from Ferguson. See where I'm going with this? Hold on. Let me go to Robert Crispin. Crispin, when you raid a doper, don't you get like money balls, as I call them, and you test that money? It's covered in dope particles. Money. Cash. What does it mean?
Stacks. It's illegal. It's derived from the illegal proceeds of criminal activity. And it's everywhere in a search warrant. It's all over. It's in the rooms. They're in safes. They're in the bad guy's pocket. Yeah. All over the place.
My best friend girl is a dope lawyer, and she carries, I don't know, $600 in a ball in her sock. Whatever. Yeah. You know where that came from? It's dope money. It's her legal fee from dopers. Now, I mean, when I hear this, Dr. Bethany Marshall, I'm poking fun at my friend carrying $600 rolled up in her sock. It's dope money. My point is, this shows a nefarious nature, right?
Of course it does.
Thinking it through. I can't use my credit card. I can't certainly write a check to, what was his name? Oh, the Punisher, the sex worker, because that's wrong and I'll get caught. So I have to pay in cash. It's an age-old method of hiding crime.
You know, Nancy, and not just in this kind of a criminal enterprise, but remember when Warren Jeffs of the FLDS cult was pulled over with all of his wives? He had tons of cash, and he was headed to Las Vegas. This is so typical of these top-heavy male enterprises where they keep women under their thumb who then abuse other women. There's always cash at the top. And Nancy, that escalated. Remember when Kid Cudi's car had a Molotov cocktail thrown in it? That Escalade was registered to Bad Boy Records, meaning he was paying for that Escalade from business funds. He was writing it off as a business expense. He probably wrote the $100,000 off as a business expense. Hey, the hotel where he was staying, where he beat Cassie Ventura, he paid for that with business funds. Are those freak-offs business expenses? Of course not. That's a lot of shifting money around that accountant had to do.
Mm. Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. You think the feds can't see through all that money? Please. You remember in The Wizard of Oz, Nima Romani, when Dorothy throws the water on the witch and she's, I'm melting. That's what's happening right now. Diddy melting. With this money evidence, because everything else, just like Ray J the other day, please, says it's just domestic abuse, $100,000 bribe, Molotov cocktail. Now we're out of, if you don't want to believe Ventura and Mia about the beatings, what about the arson? What about the bribe? Now, this is some hard evidence that cannot be shaded with the umbrella of, oh, it's just a spat between a girlfriend and a boyfriend. No, it's not. He's melting.
Even if the jurors don't believe Cassie Ventura and they believe that she was a willing participant in the freak-offs, that they were consensual, the feds can still get a conviction on RICO with arson, with kidnapping, with bribery, with obstruction, with witness tampering. There's many, many paths to get there. That's why the RICO charge is so incredibly important. It allows the feds and the Department of Justice to potentially put Diddy away for life, even if the jurors don't believe the sex trafficking was forced or coerced.
We remember now an American hero, Sheriff Andrew Clark, DeKalb County, killed in the line of duty, survived by grieving wife Jody and four beautiful children. Brianna, Brooklyn, Alexavier, and Chloe. American hero, Sheriff Andrew Clark. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.